from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Well, you don't have to look very far to see the impact of San Francisco-based company Salesforce. For starters, about two blocks from here, there's the tallest building on the city's skyline. It's a 61-story building, Salesforce Tower, and evidence of founder and CEO Mark Benioff's philanthropy abounds as well. He and his wife Lynn gave $250 million, for example, to build children's hospitals in San Francisco and Oakland, and many other things that he has supported through his foundation. And Mark Benioff is the subject of a profile in Wired titled The Gospel of Wealth, according to Mark Benioff, and its author Chris Collin joins us now. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Well, first of all, by any measure, I think Benioff is a pretty generous and civic-minded philanthropist. How did you go into this article? What were you thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. He is extremely generous. He's refreshingly outspoken on social issues. He's been wonderful about moving the needle in Silicon Valley about what leadership should look like. That's all one way of looking at him. But there was this other way, too, which is that the system is profoundly broken. And
when you say the system, what do you mean?
Across the country, you have this wealth divide that's staggering and getting worse. I'm sure some listeners remember this recent study that showed that a significant percentage of Americans would just be obliterated by a $400 emergency. So when you have millions of Americans living within one broken tooth of catastrophe, I felt like it's time to start looking at what are the mechanisms that are preserving the status quo. And I think one of them is companies, major large companies that are not paying their share in federal income tax. Another is wealthy people who are effectively advertisements for the system, who are not the bad billionaires, but are in fact the wonderful ones in a lot of ways. In some ways, they are an ad for the status quo.
And so Mark Benioff, as I mentioned, has been very philanthropic. He also recently came out in favor of putting money behind Prop C, which raised corporate taxes on some companies to fund homeless programs. In contrast, say, to Jack Dorsey from Twitter, which you also write about in your article. So how do you, compare two people like that and how they play into this narrative?
Yeah, well, Prop C is something that Benioff got a lot of press about and talks a lot about because he was doing this seemingly pretty unusual thing of saying, hey, tax me more. But it's worth noting that what Salesforce would pay under Prop C is about $10 million a year. And that's nothing to sneeze at when you're talking about homeless services. But when you compare it to what the company would pay in federal income tax, it's a pittance. So in terms of comparing him to another billionaire, I don't want to pick on Dorsey, but anyone, there are billionaires out there that we can all think of who seem like they're not necessarily part of the solution. But my question is, why do we need to choose?
And we should point out, as you point out in your article, that they made almost $8 billion in profits in 2018. And you confronted him with the fact that their tax bill was zero.
Yeah.
How was that conversation?
It was strange. We had a meeting and an interview, and I mentioned it to him, and he said, it should be whatever we were paying should have been more. And I said, to be clear, it was $0. It was not like a low number. It was a zero.
And presumably
number.
He knew that.
He seemed surprised by it. He said he would have to look into it.
Has he gotten back to you on that?
Yeah. So, I felt like, and that's sort of a larger piece of this story. I spent about a year reporting this, and it was hard sometimes to get time with him. To me, that was a reflection of another aspect of a sort of dysfunctional system where you have people with massive accumulations of wealth and influence who have not as much accountability. They don't have to meet with the press, every week like a politician might.
Talking with Chris Collin, he's got an article about Mark Benioff. It's titled The Gospel of Wealth, according to Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce. If you want to join our conversation, give us a ring at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Tell us about Mark Benioff, because he is a larger-than-life figure in some ways. I mean, he is a big guy. I think in your article you refer to him as sort of a bear of a person. What was he like? What is he like? And what's his story? How did he get to be the person that he is?
Yeah, he's a charming guy. If you've ever seen him speak, he's funny and he's affable. He's He's got sort of a quick mind. He can talk about lots of different things and all in within the space of a few minutes. He is a likable guy who grew up in the Bay Area. He's comes from San Francisco families going way back.
Son of immigrants or an immigrant anyway?
Grandson, I believe.
Grandson, yeah. Okay.
And so he came up here and he got into electronics and then computers very early on.
Very young vice president of Oracle, I think. Like,
yeah.
Very unusually young.
I believe he was the youngest vice president. Yeah.
Yeah. And he, for those who don't know, I mean, Salesforce, he pioneered this cloud-based customer managed software, I guess,
yes.
Which and how did he turn that into the, you know, enormous profit maker that it is?
I don't know. he's really good at it. I mean, it became the software that everyone in that world had to use. It was, I've heard it described as sort of the Microsoft Office of sales.
And he thinks of himself, with reasonably so, as a very generous philanthropist. He has spread his money and lots of it across some very worthy causes, public schools, LGBTQ rights,
yep.
Hospitals for kids.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to somebody who said, why are you, quote unquote, picking on him? I mean, mm-hmm. there are a lot of other corporate titans who aren't doing those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's precisely because of that, because he was setting off no alarms. And so in a way, it's because he was so is so good in so many ways that I think, like I said, I think he can be an advertisement for a system that's not working. And that's sort of the way it works with philanthropy sometimes. This is not a critique of philanthropy. It's a critique of how philanthropy is wielded. It can be a fig leaf for larger problems. And then the other thing about him is that he talks so much about how he should be taxed more. And when I learned that the company was not paying federal income tax, that seemed like something worth scrutinizing.
Talking with Chris Collin, his recent article, The Gospel of Wealth, according to Mark Benioff, appeared in the latest issue of Wired. If you want to join us, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. Again, it's 866-733-6786. And you can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Or if you prefer, you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. And we should point out, Chris, again, you pointed out that it isn't the fact that they paid zero in corporate taxes is a result in part of their lobbying for the tax bill that the Republicans passed in, I think, 2017.
Well, I want to be clear about this. Benioff and I did talk about the lobbying situation. It is fascinatingly impenetrable how lobbying works in this country. I made a million calls around Washington. The 2017 tax cuts, the Trump tax bill, happened. It was crafted very quickly behind closed doors. I talked to members of Congress who had no idea what went into that, it's particularly the lobbying, because
it's a black box.
It's a black box. So Salesforce says they did not specifically lobby for a lower corporate tax rate. But I had a source who was familiar with what Salesforce did around that bill, and that source said they were absolutely working for the best, most advantageous bill they could get.
And you could say, well, isn't that what they're supposed to do? Look out for their company.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who say that. And that's why we have the tax rates that we have right now. And I would say that's why we have these massive concentrations of wealth. I think that if you, like Benioff says, if you are a critic of the status quo, if you think that the system is broken, it's not working for millions of Americans, like he seems to feel, there is no position on that tax bill other than fighting it tooth and nail.
All right, let's go to the phones, and we'll start with Lewis in San Jose. Welcome. You're on with Chris Collin.
Hi. I just, hearing this conversation, it takes me back to my history classes and thinking about the Gilded Age and the early 1900s and the robber barons. And we all know that they put their name on universities and libraries as forms of philanthropy and ways of, I don't want to say propagandaing, but changing the public view of them. And how is this really any different from those times? And what can be done to really stop it? Elect someone, a populist like Elizabeth Warren or Senator Bernie Sanders? Or what can we really do?
Chris?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Lewis. It was Carnegie who more or less invented modern philanthropy.
And the title of your piece sort of comes from a book he wrote, right?
Yeah. So
The Gospel of Wealth.
Exactly. So he did this, and he was a wonderful philanthropist. But he also helped embed this very dangerous myth in the fabric of society, I think, which is that those who have earned the most money are the best suited to solve the biggest problems.
That they're best suited or that they have an obligation to do that?
Well, it was both. It was not just the obligation. It was also that they are the ones who are most qualified, and he was very clear about that. And that ideology, I think, has led to these tax policies that I've been talking about, because if you believe that the ultra wealthy are the most competent in terms of solving problems, then you're going to tax them less and leave problem solving to them.
All right, Lewis, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Garrett in Oakland. Welcome.
Hey, great program, as always. I just wanted to comment on the tax issue. We don't tax companies that are reinvesting their profits into the company and building more jobs and a better economy for the whole country. It's only when they take the money out and actually cash it in that either the individuals or the corporation itself starts paying taxes. So it's typical of companies like Amazon as they're growing and spreading that they don't get taxed on that money because they're not consuming it. So I don't think there's anything wrong with not paying taxes for a while, because someday they're going to have to pay capital gains tax and income taxes.
But wasn't the premise, or one of them anyway, Chris, that these big tax cuts, these companies were going to take that money and plow it back in to the company in a way that would create jobs, and that really hasn't been happening to the extent that with supporters of that bill said it would?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the 2017 tax bill, a lot of the companies said, we will absolutely be creating more jobs. And a recent study showed that I think somewhere around half had actually had layoffs. So that, yeah, it's a nice idea, but I don't think it always plays out that way.
All right, let's go to San Francisco now. And Mishra, welcome.
Great program. Thank you. I haven't had a chance to read the article yet, but I just wanted to comment on the difference between a million and a billion. When my son, who's now, 35, was probably about 12, he said, Mom, what's the difference between a million and a billion? He wanted to know if he was a million seconds old. And I said, well, let's figure it out. A million seconds, if you just, counting them, would take about 12 weeks. But to get to a billion, he wasn't a billion seconds old yet. 32 years.
Yeah, big difference.
That's a huge difference.
and Chris, you very much get into that in your article.
Yeah, I wish I had known about the breath counting technique to understand the difference between a million and a billion. But I write about that. What I say in the piece is that I think the fact that those two words rhyme is one of our biggest problems in our civilization, because it sort of conflates them, and they sort of live in the same corner of our brain, when in fact they are vastly different. They are the difference in scale between a billionaire and a million and a billion millionaire and a billionaire is enormous, and it's
just
hard.
Describe
for us
some of those differences, like what just the sort of opportunities it presents to you, and the insulation from risk in a way.
Yeah, well, I think what I said in the piece is that it's one with a millionaire. If you work at it, you can lose your millions with some dedicated carelessness. A billionaire, it is really, really hard to do that. And I think that sort of puts you into a whole nother existential category. And that means you're just sort of – you can do anything, essentially.
All right. Thanks very much for that point. And let's go to Castro Valley now. And Tom, welcome.
Hi. I wanted to ask about the corporate side of things and getting in – this gets – a lot of what you're writing about gets into shareholder value. But Mark Benioff seems to be the closest thing there is to being a B Corp or a for-benefit corp without actually being one. And that makes one wonder why there aren't more B Corps or why Etsy, which was a B Corp, had its B Corp, pulled its B Corp, got rid of it in order to maximize shareholder value. And a lot of the financiers and capitalists, for many of the reasons you've pointed to, the tax laws and other reasons, look down on for-benefit corps, even though it would be a potential evolution in improving capitalism.
And Gary, just explain what a B Corp is for those who may not know.
Well, it's hard to explain in 10 seconds, but essentially it's a for-benefit corporation which has a underlying reason other to exist other than just shareholder value. So it's for the benefit of, and then the corporation has the ability to define what that benefit is.
Yeah.
But it's an more altruistic benefit than just in addition to shareholder value. So yeah. It's not replacing shareholder value, it's in addition to. And so Etsy was one of the famous examples of a B Corp. There are other notable brands that are B Corps. And again, Salesforce comes close to that without actually declaring it because they have volunteers that go into the community, they give to Oakland Public Schools, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem still comes back to, you know, getting past the maximization of revenue only.
Okay, Tom, we're short on time, so let me just see if, Chris, do you want to respond to that at all?
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. That was actually something that I had on my list of questions that I wanted to talk to Benioff about when we had our interview, and we didn't get to get around to it because it was a short interview. But I agree, that is really interesting, and I think a lot of people don't know enough about that.
All right, let's try to sneak another call in before the top of the hour. Gary in San Francisco, you're next. And I'll ask you to please be concise because we're close to the top of the hour.
Yeah, no, I want to correct the call from Oakland. These companies that are not paying taxes are accumulating the cash and not spending it. Google has $150 billion in cash, and it's 20 years old. I don't know the Salesforce balance sheet, but this is absolutely unacceptable. And we can pop the pimple. It's simple. Look, we need to put pressure on the governor to make a special income tax for the state that should be replacing what the federal government should have been doing for these multi-billion dollar earning companies. And it probably only address about 10 companies in the state, but we should tax them fully, and we should also change capital gains for billionaires in the state of California. They talk like they're on the left, but they're not on the left. They talk like populists, but they're not. It's very simple. Look what he's doing at PG&E. He's doing nothing. He's saying he's going to do something. I haven't seen anything. But this is an example where we can do some referendums and we can – this is absolutely unacceptable. Teddy Roosevelt would roll in his grave.
Yeah. And, you know, there will be a referendum, or not a referendum, but a ballot measure probably in November to change Prop 13 and take away the protections of Prop 13 from corporations. And we're going to probably have a conversation about these kinds of things between now and November of 2020. Chris, just a few seconds left. There was a correction made to the article, which is sort of funny, and you tweeted about it in terms of the car that you saw Benioff driving away in. About that moment.
Well, at the end of our interview, my interview with Benioff, we walked out of the building where we'd been talking and said goodbye, and he climbed into a car and drove off. And I'm never happy about a correction. No writer is. But I said that he climbed into either a champagne or gold-colored Rolls Royce, and I was later informed that it was a Bentley.
A Bentley. Well, there you go. There was a lot right about the article, and you should check it out in Wired Magazine. It's called The Gospel of Wealth, according to Mark Benioff. Chris Collin, thanks so much for coming in. Great article.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about a different aspect of technology and look back at the decade in consumer trends and so on. Stick around.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.